if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 162. This is our 2021 Valspar Championship and Tenerife Open tips and picks episode. Barry O'Hanrahan joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and European Tour action. Good morning, Barry.
Morning, Steve.
You're fresh from your
coffee.
Your golf debut, your 2021 golf debut yesterday.
Yeah, the return to golf in Ireland. God, it was a long time coming. So it was great to get back out. Course in great condition. We actually got a really nice sunny day for it. So bit of heat, bit of sunscreen, no shanks. So sorry for anybody that's suffering from them at the moment for saying it. But I was hitting everything off the toe yesterday, so I think there was a subconscious do not hit one of those today. It was just great to be out. So I've got another couple of games booked this week. Got four months to make up for frustration.
There's not enough
days in the week to get make up for the golf that we missed out on. But you know, we didn't have to put up with that kind of courses being soft and miserable weather, I guess. So there's, you know, you got to look at the bright side of it. So dead happy to be back, and I think it's a good step for the good vibes in the country that a lot of sports opened yesterday. So yeah. I think there's a lot of people will be able to burn off a lot of pent up stress from the lockdown. So it's a good thing.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more.
And you guys played a game last week as well.
We did. Paul and I played our first round last Thursday, which we thoroughly enjoyed. Again, the course was firm and fiery. It was great because we've had very little rain over in the UK. We're thoroughly enjoyable. So I had a week off golf effectively last week. I didn't watch any golf. I just had a recharge week, and to actually play it, it was really, really enjoyable.
I think we're going to have to do some live betting on your next match against Paul. There has to be some way we can engage, you know.
Well, get someone to be doing a live Twitter or a live YouTube video following.
Maybe a highlights package, a full live video might be a bit hard to watch. Yeah, but
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous Golf Betting System website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics, and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on Twitter. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Now, my weekly request for 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. They've slowed up a little bit, so please, if you're in the UK, Ireland, Australia, America, Canada, wherever you are, please send over a 5-star review if you like the podcast and want to support the podcast. If you leave your name and where you are in the view, of course, I'll read that out. And any reviews that are coming right now are very, very prone to actually being listed on our PGA Championship podcast that will be coming up in a couple of weeks. There'll be a research podcast in the preceding week. And then, of course, the tips podcast on the Tuesday of the PGA Championship. We're only 3 weeks away from Kira Ireland. If you listen to the podcast on YouTube, please subscribe and like the show. Right, here's a review for us. 5 stars. It's from John in County Antrim. It's entitled The Hard Yards. A must listen to anyone interested in golf betting. The guys typically review the previous week's tournaments and then preview the current week's. all sorts of stats and trends, followed by their own personal picks. I've listened every week for over a year and wouldn't miss it. First class, boys. Keep up the good work. That, again, is from John in County Antrim.
Nice. It should be a disclaimer that we don't pay for these reviews, but that is awesome to get.
You just caught me swigging the tea. It's organic, isn't it, Barry? We were talking about this off mic. The whole, you know, it's podcast, isn't it? You can't shortcut a podcast, really, in terms of just building the audience and getting people's feedback. They're genuine reviews that come in, and they're very much appreciated.
That's great. Thank you very much, guys.
I didn't watch any golf last week. I did keep an eye on it. I said last week on the Zurich Classic, I can't stand the event, don't like it at all. You can't do any stats for it because the teams change most years and it's just a nightmare. So I tend to ignore it. I certainly don't watch it. But what I did take on board, I said of the teams I was interested in at the top of the board, Finau and Champ were one of them. And they were near the top of the leaderboard the whole week until it got down to business and then collapsed like a pack of cards. So T4 still only has one PGA Tour victory. I couldn't tell you. I mean, I think you watched more of it than I did, and I don't know if they'd have been on much of the coverage anyway, because once you're one or two over, they cut you out of coverage, don't they, if you're not contending on the Sunday. But I did hear someone saying the other day that it wasn't really, a lot of the mistakes were coming rather from Champ's side than Finau's side, but I don't know.
I didn't catch that. But I watched a reasonable amount of the down the stretch on Sunday. Mm. During the week, I don't know whether it was just the way my things were syncing for me. I also ended up watching the foursomes on Friday. Maybe it's a case I found it more interesting to watch than the four ball, because there's more potential for different things to happen in the foursomes than somebody pretty much trying to make birdie every hole. The course was quite interesting the way it played firm and fast. You know, that was certainly an unexpected aspect of the week. So
I did see some nice brown bonus, on the greens.
A nice bonus to have the course play. Probably clever as well, because otherwise you end up with minus 30-something scores. Mm. So it was interesting to see it present a bit of a challenge. But maybe, the usual talk every year about the format. And I found the foursomes more interesting to watch. So maybe there's an adaptation around that. You do a modified foursomes where you both tee off, choose the best drive, and then play foursomes out from there on every second day. Or I don't know. I mean, I don't think they'll ever get away from the four ball foursomes combo because of the viewed benefits of testing out, or a couple of teams getting to test themselves out for Ryder Cup or President's Cup purposes. So we're probably kind of stuck with it, let's say. But an interesting diversion from the regular weekly 72 hole stroke play. So It's not going to be my favorite tournament of the year, but good to see a little bit of team golf, and it was actually interesting down the stretch when bogeys were very much in play.
I backed Finau and Champ, as I said on the podcast, and I also mentioned Burns and Horschel. I backed them, so effectively I covered the week. They managed to get an each way spot. They were a useful team. But it boiled down to two experienced teams, didn't it? Effectively, Smith and Leishman for Team Australia, and Team South Africa in the form of Oosthuizen and Charles Schwarzer. I mean, if you want a foursome of high grade golfers, you looked at those two teams on paper. They were clearly big names. Oosthuizen and Schwarzer were pretty deep in the betting as well, weren't they?
They might have been in the 30s, if memory serves
good
correct.
Enough.
And when you think about the way the course played firm and fast, and you match up the guys who are there at the top of the end, two Australians and two South Africans that are well used to firm and fast golf courses, it starts to make an awful lot of sense. So an incredible whiff by Louis in the overtime, the playoff. It's just And I'd say that's kind of shocked his system for a long, long time. Just, it's the one thing he can't do. He can hit it anywhere left, but just not that right. Did you happen to catch the interview with the two boys afterwards? Schwartzel's face was absolutely priceless. He looked like he was a mixture of vomiting and pure rage at the same time. I felt like it can happen to anyone. It's awful.
You could see with Schwartzel's numbers, he's struggled for a long time, Schwartzel, hasn't he?
Mm.
But you could I was reviewing his numbers this morning, just as part of the, not this morning, but yesterday or over the weekend as part of this Valspar research. And he's been actually, you look at his ball striking and his total driving numbers, where they've been abysmal. Last couple of outings prior to the Zurich, he'd been actually playing, hitting the ball straight and long again. So it was, can't say it was no surprise, but him and Oosthuizen on a firm, fast golf course did make lots of sense. But I don't think we've ever seen it firm and fast like that before. It's normally 28 under par kind of winning.
Yeah.
On a very accessible, receptive golf course. So that element to it was difficult to see beforehand, I think. But
For sure.
Interesting.
More firm and fast golf proves more interesting again and again. So it's great to see. Hopefully, we've seen a couple of events like that recently on the PGA Tour. So maybe there's a slight focus shift or from how they're setting up courses. Introduce a bit of variety to it rather than having just dartboard golf. So, I'd be all over seeing a few more firm and fast courses throughout the rest of the season.
On the European Tour, we had the Gran Canaria Lopesan Open, and that was won by Garrick Higo, who took his second European Tour victory. And I can kind of recall you mentioning this last week with some of the reasoning behind your tips. He'd actually won in Portugal last autumn.
I just picked the wrong guys, didn't I?
So, you and Paul were talking about connecting, correlating courses. And I expect Paul did as well, mentioned that there could be links into the regular Portugal Masters. And there's Higo he rocked up and got the job done. For the record, Paul had Sam Horsfield, who, apart from a terribly slow start, got right into the mix. So Paul more than covered the week effectively with the Horsfield bet, which actually, when you're tipping up for golf courses you've never seen before and for, it's difficult.
That's a win.
Yeah, just covering the week's a win. Now, Paul isn't on this podcast. I don't know if you noticed, Barry. He's not on the call. He was sending you and me a message at some ungodly hour this morning saying that he was just about to set off on a trip to A&E. With one of his sons, who he thinks may have broken his ankle playing football last night. So Paul relays his apologies. He'll be back clearly next week. He will be back next week. And we just hope everything's going well. He's sitting in A&E at the moment with his son, waiting for the x-ray to come back.
Would have been interesting to get a record from there, but...
a live feed.
Yeah.
So I think what we'll do is Paul's pulled together a full, his full detailed Tenerife Open tips preview this week. The European Tour has moved 30 miles west to the island of Tenerife, where they're going to have two tournaments and this Canary Island swing. We've got the preview in front of us, so we might as well start to relay that to listeners. Paul's done his full preview with four selections this week for the event. They're actually playing this European Tour event on the island of Tenerife. There was some action here quite a while ago, but at least it's something to work on. The field itself, there's a few notable additions to the field from last week's event on Gran Canaria. Callum Shinquin, Laurie Cantor and Sammy Falamaki are in this week's field. And falling off the list, Sam Horsfield and Rafa Cabreo Bayo. They've hopped on a private jet, I expect, and they've actually jetted over to Florida for the Valspar Championship on the PGA Tour. Andy Sullivan also doesn't play this week over in Tenerife. Now, the golf course itself, they are playing the Melaneras Golf. The Costa Adeje Golf, which hosted the 2003 Canarias Open de España. It's designed by Jose Ganacido and opened in 1998. The Costa Adeje Golf is another coastal resort golf course that boasts superb views over the Atlantic Ocean and the island's volcano, Mount Taiti. Now, I actually go on holiday quite regularly that'll come back to me. Anyway, I go down to the Canary Islands quite a bit, and you can actually see from the island that we go to, you can actually see that particular volcano. So I know exactly what part of the world they are. From experience, this part of the world features quite a lot of wind, it tends to. I don't think we saw a lot of that last week, it has to be said.
No, it was pretty calm.
It was pretty calm, wasn't it? The golf course this week is being quoted at 6,900... Oh, by the way, it's just come to me. Fuerteventura is the island that we go to. 6,900 yards. It's a par 71. Now, as Paul said, take those numbers with a pinch of salt, because last week's Manaris golf course grew 200 yards, I think, on the Wednesday before the tournament started on the Thursday, based on the European Tour's data, which came out later on. We have seen that a lot. Back in 2003, the course was set up in one of the most unusual ways, with 18 holes comprising of 6 par 3s, 6 par 4s and 6 par 5s. According to the European Tour's website, it will play this week with 5 par 5s, with the 8th becoming a very long par 4. Understandably, such a setup puts a massive focus on how a player fares on the longer holes, with Paul McGinley shooting 21 under par on the par 5s over the course of the 4 rounds back in 2003. Fairways are wide and feature paspalum grass. Greens are huge and have been upgraded from bent grass to Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass since the 2003 event, and should run a lot quicker than the 8.6 on the stimp meter that the players faced 18 years ago. 8.6 on the stimp. 18 years ago, you don't see.
Yeah, lightning fast back then. I'm trying to find the event now online. Just wondering if they changed the par of any of the holes back in 2003. I mean, pars, like, what? I don't get why they change.
I've never seen an event with a straight split of sixes, six threes, fours, and fives. That's something I've never come across.
It's very rare. My dad and his friends go on their kind of end of season holiday to Tenerife every year, and they've played this a load, and he always talks about this as being one of the most enjoyable courses because of the variety with the split of 6, 6, and 6. It's unusual, but when you think about it as a balance for a golf course, it's almost perfect, right? It shouldn't be, but it feels like it's 6, 6, and 6, like an equal distribution across the different pars. So it's a shame. I don't know why they changed one of the things to make it a par 71, one of the par fives. But hey, listen, pars are relevant. Whoever shoots the lowest number of strokes for the week is going to win. So
going back to 2003, Kenneth Ferry won at 22 under par. He won in a playoff, which also featured Peter Hedblom and Peter Laurie.
Wow.
With Brian Davis. I remember Brian Davis when he played on the PGA Tour quite regularly, in fourth spot. Shorter hitters weren't disadvantaged 18 years ago, it would seem, with Peter Laurie making the playoff despite ranking as one of the shortest players off the tee that particular week. A quote from a very young Charles Schwartzel, It's amazing how these things come around, isn't it? Charles Spartzel played on this golf course in 03, who led after the first round, puts this further into context. Generally speaking, Spartzel said, I didn't play very well, I didn't drive very well and missed a lot of fairways, but you can get away with it on this course. I was never really in big trouble. My iron play was good. And then on my back nine, my putter woke up. With six par fives in play back in 2003, it's no surprise that the par 3-4-5 split was fairly extreme compared to regular par 72s. Kenneth Ferry won. He was 1 under par on the threes, 8 under par on the fours, and 13 under par on the par fives. Of course, if there are any last minute tweaks to this setup, Paul will this week, then that will affect this metric. However, assuming no changes, then holding on over the numerous par threes and attacking the par fives would seem to be the recipe for success. That is Paul's view from his preview. And I can kind of see that. You've got far more par threes than usual. And the par fives, again, you're going to have 20 looks at them effectively, aren't you? Which clearly is far more than we usually see.
Mm.
Is any of this making any sense at all?
No, it makes an awful lot of sense. I like a couple of his tips, so I've been kind of stuck on a couple of them for the last couple of weeks, and I might just stay with hold of faith, you know. There's enough there to not just jump ship and pivot off, so we'll see what happens.
This is Paul Summer. We should expect birdies again this week on another short, scoreable resort course with little in the way of wind to protect. In fact, just harking back to the wind. In terms of the actual conditions this week, it looks like a carbon copy for what we saw last week on Gran Canaria. Mild, sunny conditions expected, with the thermometer hitting the low 70s Fahrenheit. The breeze may pick up a little in the afternoon, but nothing more than 10 miles an hour. So no problems there. 15 under was leading at the halfway point on this course back in 03, and the cut fell at 6 under par. Wow. Par 3 scoring, par 5 scoring and putting on these Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens would seem to be the strongest pointers. And that is what has shaped Paul's four selections. I'll go in reverse order with, in fact, he's gone for five. He has gone for our friend Alejandro Canizares. He's gone a point each way, 125-1 with Bet365 on that particular bet. I don't think that needs, I mean, for regular listeners who have listened over the last couple of weeks, clearly Canizares played extremely well at the Austrian Golf Open, didn't he? Mm. He made the cut last week, but never really got into any form of contention after a slow start. But Paul's basically saying that the guy's game should translate very well to this golf course this week again. And that's what he believed last week, based upon the momentum he was bringing over from Austria. He's clearly playing some half-decent stuff at the moment, Canizares.
Yeah, I was on him last week as well. I thought he'd just kind of continue rolling and didn't quite happen, but you know, he had a slow start in round one. So it's always tough when you start like shooting a level par. I think it was level par or just around level par at the start of a tournament, and the rest of the field
are the leaders
miles ahead. So all of a sudden, you're in this really tricky spot where you know you have to press to catch up, but by pressing, you can introduce mistakes and that ruins your chances of catching up. So it's it's just very hard to make up that ground. So
to back that up, he shot 65, 67, 66 Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Decent enough, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, he probably arrived there on a bit of a downer. You never know how they're going to react, do you? A bit of a downer from the Sunday in Austria, gets off the charter flight, and then all of a sudden, once he's forgotten about that on the Thursday, starts playing the same golf, quality of golf he was playing in Austria for the previous, the three rounds to get the lead over in Austria.
A palate cleanser.
You got it. Next up for Paul, he again Bet365, 90-1 he got on Pep Angle. A point each way. Scouring the scorecards from post-lockdown European Tour events for clues as to who might go well this week leads us, or Paul, to Pep Angle, who finished runner-up to Garrick Hicko at the Open de Portugal on another quirky setup with five par fives and five par threes. Despite opening with a level par round of 72 that week, the Spaniard went on to shoot three straight rounds of 66 to push last week's victor all the way at Royal Ibados, another coastal track like this week, finishing three such shots ahead of the nearest challengers into the bargain. Eighth at the Kenya Open is the 28-year-old's best result of 2021. However, last week's 29th could have been so much better had it not been, yes, you've guessed it, for a slow start, opening with a 1 over par 71 before shooting 64, 65, 67 to finish in a much more respectable position. Powerful driving and strong iron play are Pep's core strengths, and with reachable par fives and a plethora of par threes, that looks like a decent combination to Paul as he looks to break through at European Tour level. So Pep Angle, I'm not pronouncing the S on that one, I'm sure I'm wrong, a point each way at 90-1 with Bet365 is Paul's second selection. Now you mentioned, I mean, I haven't asked you yet, but you mentioned about keeping the faith. I don't know who you've gone for this week, but I know for a fact that you've mentioned an Italian by the name of Nino Battaglia recently.
I backed him last week, and I'm going to back him again.
Because that's Paul's third selection. He's gone for Nino Battaglia, so yeah, add some muscle to the skeleton of this particular selection, because you must be on the same tracks of Paul.
Yeah, well, a little bit. Yeah, but Paul's obviously has a little bit more than my emotional response to just auto backing to try chase the losses. So here we go. In his 24 attempts at the par threes last week, nobody scored any better than him. He was 7 under for the par threes. So there's something clearly going very well with his irons and his ball striking. So it's a really good indicator going into this week. It's with oh my God, that is a lot coming up this week. Yeah, par threes. It'll be terrifying if you're not hitting your irons well playing that many of them. So yeah. Here we go. The long hitting 32-year-old can make mincemeat of the par fives to add to the par three prowess, and that bodes well on this quirky scorecard as he goes after his maiden victory on the European Tour. Despite his three-figure quote here this week, there's been a lot to like about the two-time Alps Tour winner this year. 19th at the Qatar Masters, with some other good results in Kenya, 12th and 10th, and finishing 63 in his last round in Kenya, and another 63 last week, suggests that there's little wrong with his scoring right now, and it won't take a massive improvement to the putter to see him far closer to the top of the leaderboard than last week's result. His putter doesn't look sensational in his hands, so probably just needs to find that little that little added bonus for the week with the putter might help get him up there.
Paul managed to get 90-1, 8 places each way with our friends at Ladbrokes, which seems like a good bet. He's certainly percolating, the Italian, isn't he?
Yeah.
There's something there.
Good words. So yeah, I'm going to stick with them as well, and I'll probably hunt out the maximum number of places and sacrifice a tiny bit on the top price.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got the 8 place option at Coral and Ladbrokes this week. I know over on the PGA Tour, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I'd already released my tips, and Ball Sports have gone 10 places each way this week, which is incredible value. Just to take you through the top of the board this week, we've got Rosner at 16-1. He's the favourite. Matthias Swab at 18s. Last week's winner, Garrick Higo, is 20-1, but 18-1 generally. And then you've got Jo Slauten at 25s. JB Hansen, 28s, who I know Paul was tempted on. Justin Harding at 30s. Kurt Kitayama, who blew out big style last week at 33s with Victor Dubuisson. And then there's a couple of others in them on that mix. You've got Thorbjørn Olsen, who played well last week. Kanters at 35s. But Paul has gone for two 33-1 shouts. He's gone for Max Kiefer, who's in an absolute, you know, great run of form. is a toss up. Does he contend for the third week, running, or does he go backwards? Paul thinks that he's going to hold that form together. So 2 points each way, 33-1 with Unibet, 6 places each way. Paul got on Kiefer. Doesn't really need a lot more explanation. He's also gone for the Scott. And this guy we've mentioned on the podcast, certainly last year, a big, big reputation, Callum Hill. Paul thinks he's another, he looks like a winner in waiting on the European Tour. He's just very, very polished individual, a really young talent. He actually ranks on par fives this season to date on the European Tour, third for par five scoring. He's playing some outstanding stuff right now. He also ranks second for par three scoring season to date. There's some decent metrics there. And 29th last week in Gran Canaria. As Paul says here, loosen the limbs after 4 weeks away from competitive golf. And every element of his game was strokes gained positive over on the Melanes golf course. Encouraging signs as he looks to push his career to the next level. And the world's top 100 is beckoning should he win this week, with the US PGA Championship the mere matter of 3 weeks away. A huge carrot for some of these players that are on the fringes of the top 100, it has to be said. So Paul at the top end, 233-1 shouts. He's gone Kiefer and he's gone for Callum Hill. Any other bets for you?
I got a bit creative with the predictor model last night and just started punching in a few different ideas. Mm-hmm. And one came out not totally towards the top, but in the top six or seven, and it was Nicholas Lemke.
Okay.
So I started doing a little bit more digging in as to why he had a withdrawal beside his name a couple of weeks ago. And unfortunately, he had COVID. So there's a little bit of how that, if there's any after effects of that still lingering. But before that, he had a very interesting run of 9th, 33rd and 14th. So playing some good golf, and he absolutely pounds the ball. He's one of the longest on tour. He's 4th in driving distance. He also combines that with a pretty hot putter. He's 8th for putts per green and reg, but he's also 5th in average putts per round. He's 4th in sand saves and 5th in scoring average for this season. So there's a lot of stuff to like there. And I think the distance can only be a benefit this week with so many par fives to attack. He's going to have a lot of looks at eagle. So he is available widely at 80-1, 7 places, and 60-1, 8 places. But I think in this stage, I might just get a little bit greedy and take the 80s. It's a bit too much of a gap down to the 60s. And
sometimes.
Yeah, just a little bit much. I mean, you just know it's going to happen, right? But anyway, if he finishes 8th, at least I'll have had a good sweat for the week on the bet. So, and then one, I might just try to find a tiny bet on Niall Carney, Irish lad, who's playing some nice stuff. Nice stuff at the moment.
Yeah, I noticed him on the leaderboard last week. Yeah.
Yeah. So where are we? So he can get him. He's up priced up to 250-1, but if you want to take a couple more places, he's widely available at 200-1.
So. Paul and I followed him for a number of holes at Wentworth. I think it was 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We followed him round. Well, it might have been Wentworth, or it might have been Walton Heath, the one that Eddie Pepperell won, the Betfred British Masters. Anyway, we followed him round, and he looked a decent talent even that day, and we're talking quite a few years ago. He hasn't made that big breakthrough yet, but he seems to be gaining a lot more confidence on the European Tour. He's been a lot more visual on leaderboards recently.
Yeah. So it's about making that consistent leap, I guess, into grabbing himself some top tens. He seems to be making those progressive steps as he goes along. And the other thing that I really liked, in addition to just the raw results, was that in the model I put up last night, just for reference, the top three in that were Thorbjørn Olsen, Jamie Donaldson, Victor Dubuisson, Lewis Jouten, and Max Kiefer. So there's some good players up at the top of this model. A lot was focused on coastal positive, a bit of driving accuracy, and, you know, kind of birdie focus, really. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wasn't and Bermuda positive too because of the greens. So it's you know, Niall Carney showed up 19th or in that model, so 250 to 1, and playing the Irish angle. I just said, why not? Well, 200 to 250 to 1, whichever I pick. So that's that. Those are those two little additions.
So that's the Tenerife Open. I apologise to listeners. Clearly, Paul stuck in A&E, and
probably got his head. We've done our bit.
It wasn't seamless in any way, shape, or form. But all I can do is point listeners, go to Paul's full preview at Golf Betting System. Just, you know, Golf Betting System, Golf Betting Tips. Find us on search engine on Google. You'll click straight through, and Paul has done his usual magic there. A full detailed breakdown of this event. Five selections there. I'll just recap his selections. He's gone for Kiefer, Callum Hill, Nino Battaglia, who Barry's also on. He's got Pep Angle, and he's also got Alejandro Canizares. Have you got Canizares? You should, because that will come and bite you on the bottom, Barry.
I'm sticking with Battaglia and Canizares, yeah.
Yeah, you are. Okay, right.
So four this week. It's juicy for me on the European Tour, because I usually tank, so...
I can't ask Paul for his fade of the week, so I'm going to ask you.
Oh, no.
Who's your fade of the week at the Tenerife Open? Who was Paul's fade last week? I've actually forgotten.
Yeah, it's not so ingrained into our heads anymore yet, is it?
No, it isn't.
Drill it down a bit more.
I know that he clearly he faded Keimer, who came... It was near the top. I can't remember who faded. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Who would you fade at the top of the leaderboard this week?
Or the betting board, rather. Yeah. Okay. Picking from like the top 10. Yeah. I'd probably say Kiefer. I know he's playing great, but there's a lot of energy burnt in two really deep hunts back-to-back weeks. So it would not shock me to see him get off to a fast start, but maybe just run out of steam.
I know Guido's been very popular this week, hasn't he? Because he finished like a train last week. Guido. Right, okay, let's cross over the Atlantic, shall we? Let's head to Palm Harbor, Florida, for the Valspar Championship. Your summary of the Copperhead course at Innisbrook Resort last week off mic was absolutely fantastic, Barry. You basically said it's an absolute bitch of a golf course.
Yeah, that's probably, yeah. It feels like that every year, right?
It's not easy, is it? If you wanted to start building up for a major championship on a major championship tough golf course, Copperhead isn't a bad shout, is it? It tends to have firm conditions, releasing greens, and you read a lot of player comments around here. I mean, it's all in my betting preview. They basically say you cannot fake this golf course, and a lot of the approaches, the greens, you mentioned this as well, a lot of the greens, and the, you know, we've got dogleg holes. It's a tip. Let's get this straight, right? The golf course itself is located on the opposite coast to where you find PGA National, where you find Bay Hill. So we're now on the Gulf of Mexico, western side of Florida, and it's up towards that northwest corner of Florida, Palm Harbor, basically Tampa Bay. But this is by no means a Florida-type golf course with lots of water and lake surrounding holes. This, to me, is far more and feels and plays like a Carolina golf course. So it plays far more like a harbour town. It plays far more like a Quail Hollow, which we are going to see next week. And actually, the way that they built this into the schedule now, it's almost as if you've got almost like a Carolina swing because you've got harbour town. I know we're playing this in Florida, but you're playing a Carolina-type golf course this week at Palm Harbour. And then next week, they're going to Quail Hollow. So you've got three very similar golf courses in their look, their feel. Quail Hollow's a lot longer, a bit wider, but even so, tree line, dog legs everywhere. What they also say about this golf course at Copperhead is a lot of the greens are actually at 45 degree angles to the fairways. So you've got a lot of diagonal greens, which makes finding the right levels of greens and attacking pins really, really difficult. And you know, you've got to use both kind of shot shapes around here as well. It's a really kind of old style, quirky golf course. And what makes matters even worse, of course, is that you've got some water in play on 9 of the 18 holes, and you've got traditionally firm and fiery conditions here. You know, balls are releasing on greens this week. Which is always good to see.
Yeah, it's great. You're certainly not going to want to play this course if you have a little bit of doubt in your mind about what's going on with your swing. It'll chew you up, right?
Yeah. It really will chew you up.
It's a brilliant tune-up for the guys, you know, heading into the major in 3 weeks' time. Really test the game, but give them time to figure out things if elements of their game aren't where they want them to be. It's just really nicely timed.
We're 3 weeks away from the PGA Championship, and I always like to plot where the elite players are playing. Now, this week, top of the mark betting board, Justin Thomas, 9-1. Dustin Johnson, the world number one, at 11-1. That price is starting to get bigger. You then have a jump. Patrick Reed at 20-1. Reed is the other kind of player that, you've either got to be on point with your ball striking, or you've got to have an absolutely unbelievable short game. Reed always steps into that category and has finished second here, I think, potentially twice. I know he was second here a couple of years ago when he was T2 with Tiger Woods the first year that Paul Casey won here in 2018. He's at 20-1. Corey Connors is at 20-1. Victor Hovland's at 22-1. With the defending champion from 2019, he's going for a hat-trick of PGA Tour wins, Paul Casey at 22-1. Then you've got Tyrrell Hatton at 28s, Sung Jae-im at 30s, Louis Oosthuizen 33-1 with Abraham Ancer and Scottie Scheffler, 33-1 bar the rest. Now, I'm just going to take you through this. I pulled this together. So, you know, there's a list of some runners and riders for the majors coming up. We've also got Coke Rag, who's a bit of a course specialist. Joachim Niemann playing this week. Justin Rose playing this week. And then we're getting down to players that, for me, I don't think they're going to win majors anytime soon. And that's my own personal perspective. Gary Woodland's in there. He's 70-1, 80-1 at Bet365. What I thought I'd do, just to try and give some information to the listeners, something that isn't going to be readily available out there, I've pulled together a list of where the big names are playing over the next 2 weeks building up to the PGA Championship. Because as we've said with the PGA, you've got to keep a very close eye on what players are doing right now to get to join the dots for the PGA Championship. You know, strokes going tee to green, approach play, total driving. Because we know what we're going to face at Kiawah Island. A ridiculously long par 72 by the coast where power, hitting and ball striking is going to be absolutely vital this week. Right, Wells Fargo. This is the field of the elite players next week. Bear in mind, these can change. There could be late additions to the field. Patrick Cantlay, Corey Connors. So this is at Quail Hollow next week. I said that it would be loaded. Bryson DeChambeau, Tony Finau, Tommy Fleetwood, Sung Jae-im, Shane Lowry, Rory McIlroy, Joachim Niemann, I'm back to that again. Joachim Niemann, sorry. Rahm, Reed, Schauffele, Simpson, I know it's terrible, isn't it? Simpson, JT, Matthew Wolf, Gary Woodland, and Will Zalatoris. Those are the elite names in the field next week at the Wells Fargo we sit here. They've still got till Friday to firm that field up.
It's very appealing, isn't it?
That's a good field, isn't it?
It says a lot about the field. It says a lot about like where this week and Copperhead sits in the schedule that the field is not quite as strong. And I think also the difficulty of the golf course, maybe some guys are just don't want that confidence bashing right now. Mm-hmm. That you could easily suffer at this golf course. You know, you go out, you could shoot a couple of 75s or something like that, and be wandering and soul searching for a while.
Well, it's interesting with JT. He's playing this week and next week, and then he takes off the AT&T Byron Nelson down in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could almost... Is he using this week as a tune-up to then really go for it at Quail Hollow next week? There's lots of different ways of looking at things. Rory plays next week at Quail Hollow. He doesn't play the week before, as it stands in the field right now. The AT&T Byron Nelson, which they're playing at a new golf course this year, TPC Craig Ranch, which is in Dallas, Texas. Here are the elite names in that field at the moment. DeChambeau. So DeChambeau is playing both Quail Hollow and Byron Nelson. Matthew Fitzpatrick is playing Byron Nelson. Sergio Garcia. Dustin Johnson is playing again that week. We always know with DJ, he doesn't mind the week before tuning up for a major, does he? He did that when he won the Masters. He played at Houston the week before winning the Masters last year. And also, I think he played the week before at Southwind before he won the US Open. Mark Leishman plays Byron Nelson. I don't think it's going to surprise you that Hideki Matsuyama's playing the week before the PGA Championship, because that's exactly what he did when he won the Masters, played Valero and then won the Masters the week after. John Rahm is playing both. John Rahm is playing both the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow and TPC Craig Ranch. So you think it through, Rahm will have played the team event at Zurich. He'll have played 3 out of 4 weeks leading up to the PGA Championship. That's good. A step up.
Yeah. It's the introduction of a Texas event amongst this, let's say, East Coast Carolina style course swing, right before going back to a Carolina style course for the PGA Championship is, I don't know how the guys are viewing that. Does it like disrupt the flow they might be in, or the vibes they have, or how they're playing and attacking golf courses? By jumping over to a Texas course and then back?
I don't know anything about it either. It's a course that I haven't come across, Craig Ranch. I couldn't even tell you if it's bent grass, Bermuda grass, whatever the greens are. Bearing in mind, we're playing Pass Bowlam on Kiowa Island. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Scotty Scheffler is playing the Byron Nelson. So he's going from here this week at Valspar, missing out Quail Hollow and going to Craig Ranch. Jordan Spieth, of course, plays in Dallas, his hometown. You think about Spieth, he'll be an awful price. I get that. But something like the Texas swing and ticking off every Texas golf course before he retires, you would have thought would be something that would be a memorable target for him. I know for a fact, when they used to play this at Las Colinas, he always used to say in interviews he hated that golf course, something chronic. This is a new course for the tour. He might actually really like this one. So Spieth plays that AT&T Byron Nelson. Lee Westwood plays it. And so does Will Zalatoris. Zalatoris is going to play both the Wells Fargo and the AT&T Byron Nelson the week before the PGA Championship. I just thought that was interesting. Just to see where the top names are playing over this week and the next 2 weeks. As I said, fields do change. There will be additions to these fields, but right here, right now, those are the elite players and where they're playing in the next 3 weeks. Back to the Valspar. Difficult golf course, as we said. I mean, just to clarify the difficulty. 2019, last time they played here, this played at a stroke over the par 71 average for the field, and it was the sixth most difficult golf course on the PGA Tour in 2019. It is no cakewalk. From an agronomy perspective, the greens are 5,800 square feet on average, so relatively small. They feature Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass, which are overseeded with Poa trivialis. We've had a lot of this overseed. It's the time of the year, clearly. No bent grass on these greens, though. Poa trivialis overseed on a Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass base. It's just tough. 3-inch rough as well. And from the forecast, from the rain that this area's had very little rain in February and March. There's been more rain in April. I think there was 22 or 25 mils last week on the golf course. But looking at forecasts, doesn't appear to be any real risk of precipitation across tournament week. And it looks like it could be blowing up to 15 to 20 miles an hour, just to add a little bit more of difficulty to it across both Thursday and Friday. So on a golf course of this difficulty, if you're throwing in a 15 to 20 mile an hour wind as well,
yeah,
it's not helping the situation, is it?
That's going to test your patience. Oh my God.
I'm just literally going on to Windfinder right now to see what the forecast is looking at. Bearing in mind we're recording this on Tuesday, it's still pretty much the same. Yeah, it looks like it's 15 to 20 miles an hour across the day Thursday, and it actually looks like Friday is this is more severe than when I wrote the tips yesterday, Monday. It actually looks like it could be gusting up to 25 miles an hour on the Friday. Wow. Target score for me, looking at this, Saturday looks a bit perky as well. Anything up to potentially 15, 18 miles an hour? And it's a completely different wind direction on the Saturday. It's a northerly, where the Thursday and the Friday are a southerly wind. I think, you know, Barry, we could be looking at something like a 7 to 8 under par winning again this week, which is what we've seen here the last two. I think Casey won at 8 under and 10 under the last two renewals. This is, I'd be amazed if they reached double digits. Absolutely amazed. It's a proper technical grinding tournament this week. And I didn't even mention the snake pit.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, exactly. Snake pit. Every 5 seconds, snake pit. Yes, yeah. It's a tough golf course with a very difficult finish. Let's put it that way. Anything to add? I don't know. I just can't see them getting to double digits. Just cannot see it.
The factors seem to be aligning for that, yeah. It should be an interesting watch, you know. Not to brutalize the guys, but like a pretty testing golf course with wind as a factor, it's going to be it's going to make for some interesting viewing, and you know you might catch one or two nuggets for the weeks ahead that, you know, guys who go reasonably well this week maybe don't win, but you can keep them in mind for going to an easier test in the next couple of weeks. Things could, you know, work out quite well for them then in that situation. You know, you come from a hard test to an easy test. You're like, oh, this is easy. Yeah, let's go get it. So I'm finding it hard to figure out who to pick though. Do you have any to kind of get us started? Or
the player I had in mind for this, and I've had this player in mind for this for ages, I knew that we weren't going to get a great price on him. But then, you know, what kind of price do you expect on a guy that's got such great form recently? I don't know. A lot of people are price proud, aren't they? I'm not backing him at this price. I can be accused of that. I've done that lots and lots of time. But I'm trying not to.
We all have. We all have.
You listen to this. Third at Bay Hill. Seventh at Sawgrass. Eighth at Augusta at the Masters. He was 10th at the Masters in November. And he was 4th last time out at Harbourtown. I mean, based on that form, what do you expect for a price? I mean, if there's a guy there, a player there, that's, you know, a concrete block to the back of the head that is due a victory, I don't know what is. And then I remember this going way past. I'd never heard of this individual. Never heard of him. And all of a sudden, 2018... great tournament because Tiger Woods played it. This was the season where Woods won the Tour Championship at the end of the year, and he was building momentum. He was 6th at the Open that year, 2nd at the PGA Championship behind Brooks Koepka, and he went on to win the Tour Championship. Early on that year, he played the Valspar. He played Honda Classic Valspar, and then he went and kind of semi-contended at Bay Hill. I remember it well. I was actually on him at Bay Hill, getting really excited, and he blasted it into someone's garden, I think, when it was getting quite close. That was the Ian McElroy one. Anyway, there was this guy leading. No one had heard of him. In fact, he'd barely been priced up because he was a late alternate into the field when Kyle Stanley withdrew. He was a rookie on the PGA Tour, but he had such low status, he wasn't even getting into fields like the Valspar. His name was Corey Connors. And he was the 36 and 54 hole leader at this tournament back in 2018 as an alternate, a late alternate. And he just, you just look at Paul, you know, look at the names that have won around here. Charles Svartzel, a Masters champion. You know, you've got Jordan Spieth, who is a Masters champion. He's won around here in 2015. Paul Casey, he goes well at Augusta. A real top level ball striker extraordinaire, Paul Casey. Corey Connors just fits that mould completely. Gary Woodland won this in 2011 at a price. Triple digits he won, 2011. To me, it just fits Connors down to the ground. I don't think you've got to be a bomber. It's all about strokes gained off the tee, really. I'll tell you through the strokes gained metrics, actually. I, as part of the preview, look at where players have ranked in the years that they won in the field for their strokes gained metrics. Strokes gained off the tee across the last four winners here, going back to Svartzel. Strokes gained off the tee, 38th. Now, how often do you see that metric so low on the PGA Tour? Strokes gained off the tee, 38th. That's the average position of the last four winners in the field. So actual bombing, irrelevant this week. Strokes gained on approach, 5th. Strokes gained around the green, 15th. So you've got to have a short game. Strokes gained tee to green, 4th. Strokes gained putting, 19th. It just shouts, it screams Corey Connors. So I just, 2 points each way I went on Corey Connors. I got 25-1 on Connors. He's been backed in. That was getting backed in even as I was recording the YouTube show yesterday. He's just now a straight 20-1 shot, really.
That's quite short for a guy who's, I'm not going to say only won once on tour, but he's only won once on tour. But, God, he's putting in an awful lot of place results.
It isn't the greatest of fields either, is it? But yeah, it's short. I mean, he's sitting there alongside Victor Hovland, so.
I mean, if you'd backed him, what, the last six times he's gone out, you'd have got each way payouts to 8 places 4 of those 6 times.
If he was to win, he's that kind of Matt Kuchar winner going back in the day, isn't it? Kuchar used to literally, it was 10th, 8th, 6th, 4th. And eventually, when everyone was dying a death and he was at 20-1, he'd finally get over the line somehow.
He just ground down the fields week on week, yeah.
It's one of those, isn't it?
Connors is on it. He's got a good progression. He's gone 14th, 8th, 4th. So, keeps that up. He's got it.
And the other thing is, you just know. I mean, you can tell from that 2018 outing. That's the only time he's played here. He eventually finished 16th. He was in the last group that year with Paul Casey. Was it Paul Casey? Or it might have been Justin Rose. It was one or t'other. And that was his course debut as an alternate, as a rookie on the PGA Tour. So the course clearly fits. So it was one of those. If I hadn't tipped up Corey Connors and he won this week, I'd literally be jumping out of the office window and breaking both my legs. So he had to be in. So that was my first tip. I know it's not your scene, it's not your style. Oh, just on Corey Connors, by the way, you know I keep these 8-week metrics for all statistics that I throw out there completely free of charge as part of my preview. Corey Connors ranks in this field 3rd for strokes gained off the tee, 1st for strokes gained on approach, bearing in mind approach is quite important this week. He also ranks 1st for strokes gained tee to green and 1st for strokes gained total. So basically strokes gained current form over the last 8 weeks. Corey Connors ranks number 1. So 25-1, looking at those statistics. I didn't think it was a totally unbackable price for me.
No, it's good. It's good. And he's playing phenomenal golf. What? Okay. The only thing he needs to do is just stay in contention, right? At the very least, give you a sweat for your money. So
he's 38th in the world now. You can look at it one of two ways. You know, it's bound to fall. He's actually been putting quite well recently. He's actually ranks in the top 11 for strokes gained putting, which always used to be his nemesis. That's in the last 8 weeks. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll throw this in the. If you can get some feedback to me, listeners, and if you're happy with this, and this is something I'm more than willing to do on podcasts moving forward, I'll take you through the top 12 of my analysis for strokes gained approach, bearing in mind it's the most important metric this week, over the last 8 weeks. This includes European Tour and PGA Tour. Tied for 11th, Taylor Gooch and Justin Rose. 10, interesting name, Phil Mickelson. 10th for strokes gained approach the last 8 weeks. 9, Justin Thomas. We know what an amazing approach player he is. Tied for 6th, Abraham Anser, Doug Gim. I did have a really good close look at Doug Gim. And Sam Horsfield, who's been playing amazing stuff on the European Tour, plays this week. 4, the man that's going for a hat-trick, Paul Casey. He's tied with James Hahn. 3, Emiliano Griot. We just know how brilliantly he's playing at the moment, but never seems to get a victory. That might change this week, you never know. 2, Rasmus Højgaard, who again playing amazing stuff on the European Tour. And number 1, Corey Connors. So that's the top 12 in terms of my rolling strokes gained approach over the last 8 weeks. Just gives you a flavour of who's hitting the ball really sweetly with the irons and the approach play over recent tournaments. So yes, I led with Connors. My next bet, someone a little bit more under the radar, but for me he's a Bermuda grass monster. I mean, if you just look at where he's played well this season, and there's a lot of expectations on this lad. 5th at Kapalua, Century Tournament of Champions. 12th at PGA West, where they play the American Express. And he had a top 10 at the Honda Classic, where he finished 8th. He also finished 13th last time out at Harbour Town, where he was 4th after 36 holes and 54 holes in South Carolina. And for me, that performance was really interesting because Sung Jae-in has been driving the ball phenomenally this season. He's been putting phenomenally this season. It's been the approach play and the around the green game which has been struggling, potentially, the around the green game. That's been patchy. But last time out at Harbour Town, I'm not interested in what happened last week. He played with Benny Ann, he missed the cut. No interest to me whatsoever. I'm glad he did. It kept his price high this week. He was 12th for total driving, 4th for total accuracy, 8th for ball striking at Harbour Town. If you look at that from a strokes gained angle, he was 18th for strokes gained on approach and 18th for strokes gained tee to green. And then you just look at the world number 19 and what he's done in the past. He was 4th on his PGA Tour debut at the 2018 Safeway Open. They played that at Silverado over in California. That's a tree-lined, short, pretty claustrophobic golf course. I mean, 4th on his PGA Tour debut. That showed you the talent we were dealing with Sung Jae-in. The year after that, 2019, he did his first Florida swing. He finished 3rd at Bay Hill behind Francesco Molinari. And he was 4th here at Copperhead behind Paul Casey. Brilliant. And then in 2020, he did his second Florida swing. He won the Honda Classic at 6 under par. And then the week after that, he finished 3rd at Bay Hill. That was the tournament that Tyrrell Hatton won when I was on board him at 55-1. So you just look at those. I mean, I'm just going recapping here. That 9 under, Bay Hill behind Francesco Molinari, 9 under par. He was 4th at Copperhead here behind Paul Casey, 6 under par. When he won the Honda Classic, he won that at 6 under par. And then he was 3rd behind Tyrrell Hatton at Bay Hill in 2020 last year. he was 2 under par. So if we're talking about a player that comes to the party when single digits are the winning score in Florida, Sungjae Im is right in the wheelhouse, mate. Absolutely right there. And bearing in mind, where did he pop up a few weeks ago before the Masters? Even though he wasn't playing very well with his approach play, he was 8th at the Honda Classic. Again, another single-digit winning score in Florida. You look at Sungjae Im. He's got a couple of top tens at Sedgefield, where they play the Wyndham Championship. Again, that is another Carolina golf course, isn't it? That tight par 70 there. He just ticks every box when it comes to correlating courses and where you should be playing well to win this. Sungjae Im is all over it like a rash. I got 30-1, 8 places each way with Paddy Power. You've got, based on that sell, you've got to be tempted on Sungjae Im yourself, surely, Barry.
I backed him at the Masters and he completely disappointed. But there's so much going. I mean, there was a reason I backed him at the Masters, because there's been so much good going for him recently.
The driving's been outstanding.
And based on the correlation to like the tough courses and that being won this week, it's just everything seems to be aligning very seriously towards backing him. I don't think I can avoid putting a bet on him.
My gut feel on Sungjae Im is, if you're going to a Sedgefield where 22 under par wins in August, yeah? You know, that to me is a sort of Brant Snedeker kind of test. I think Im struggles when the score is super, super resort level low. He comes to the party on proper tough tracks where you are fighting for pars, you're grinding, yeah? Par's a great score, and that's where Im really seems to come to the party. He's actually, from a South Korean perspective, he's definitely their best shot for a major championship winner that we've seen out of Korea, probably since KJ Choi. I think he's got the real base. I mean, as you said, second at the Masters last year basically stamps that, doesn't it? Im's the kind of player that could be that Korean winner of a major, because he just comes to the party on the tougher golf courses. So, yeah, I'm all over him this week. I don't see anyone backing him, by the way, and that's fine. People back who they want to back. There's been no early interest in him whatsoever. That 30-1 that I got yesterday afternoon is still there. No one's attacking it whatsoever.
It's slightly tempting to even hang on to see. But do you think he'd drift much,
might
though?
It might drift.
To what, 33s, 35s?
Yeah, might get 33s. Anyone in this kind of mid-tier you're after?
I'm curious. Louis just kills me when I back him. So I'm just curious how he bounces back this week after the disappointment of Sunday.
His record here is phenomenal, isn't it?
He's playing very well at the moment. So,
what did you say about TP Louisiana? You said it was firm and fast, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you said clearly, yeah, there was a set of Australians and South Africans were fighting it out, weren't they? So it's going to be no different this week, and it's going to be a far tougher golf course. Now, Oosthuizen, his record here is absolutely phenomenal. I'm just looking here on the sheet. Second here last time they played, 16th and 7th, though his last three outings here. That's crazy, isn't it? It's just how does he respond to that playoff?
That's the mystery of Louis. You just never know what Louis is going to show up on any given week. The mystery, but like
that also throws in the fact that, do you look at a Brandon Grace and do you look at Charles Svartzel this week? The other, and Eric Van Rooyen. There's 4 South Africans in this field. An interesting angle. I haven't tipped any of them, so that's probably a good thing.
Leave them open for the rest of the betting community. Louis's there, but I just don't know if I can pull the trigger on him. I never seem to time him correctly, so
My take on this, I mean, shoot me down. I mean, I've gone for Corey Connors at 25-1, so at least he has one on the PGA Tour. But yeah, you've got Oosthuizen there, Abraham Anson, a tour maiden. Scotty Scheffler, a tour maiden. Jason Kokrags only ever won once on the tour. Joachim Niemann only won once on tour. Russell Henley hasn't won for her age. There's a lot of very short players that are clearly playing some great golf that just don't win. Charlie Hoffman, 45-1. Ryan Palmer, our old friend, hasn't won a singles tournament since 2010, 50-1. You can't argue that Palmer's playing brilliant golf because he's, you know, he's in the top 20, what is it, top 30 in the world now. Just keeps grinding out results, but doesn't win, does he? There's a Cameron Tringale is another one. They're all in a line here. Emiliano Grillo. There's a lot of non-winners in that juicy mid-range in terms of prices. And then you've got Chris Kirk at 55s or Kevin Na at 55s. Kevin Na is bound to go well because he missed the cut last time I tipped him at the Harbour. And Chris Kirk, he's playing golf from the gods, isn't he?
But he doesn't have a great record around here, Kirk.
No, he doesn't, does he?
No, 42nd missed cut, 49th missed cut, his last four outings. That would suggest there's not a super synchronisation going on.
Bubba Watson's there. I mean, you can grab Bubba Watson at 60-1 right now with Unibet. I don't know. There was a lot of players there I just didn't fancy in that price range, and that's the kind of price range I think you need to be really gunning for, because just the average winning odds here, this won't surprise anyone. Casey won at 25-1 and 25-1. Hadwin won 25s. Svartzel at 33s. Spieth at 16s.
So it's either a short price or 100-1er.
Yeah. John Sendon was before Spieth. He won 125-1.
Yeah, I think if it kind of feels like, I was going to ask you about like how short price guys go here, because it seems like the kind of test that just demands somebody to be on their game and will inevitably be priced short because they're a high quality player. So, or you get that surprise winner from outside that's been showing, whereas the mid-range guys are kind of not quite doing enough of any one particular thing or enough particular things to put them in the right spot to go win this week. So you get either the short price guy or surprise winner.
If you and I went back to the 2018 and 2019, well, definitely 2019, I don't even know if we were around 2018, Valspar, but if you go back to our podcast and you'd have said, "Paul, I'm backing Paul Casey at 25-1 and 25-1 to win this," you and I would have been laughing, banging our heads against the table, going, "No way I'm backing Paul Casey at 25-1. And he won both of them. Kind of Corey Connors-esque. I don't know if you're thinking the same thing as I'm thinking. Luke Donald won this in 2012 at 11-1. That was the year he was world number one by fighting with Rory McIlroy. Jim Furyk, 30-1, 3-0-1 in 2010. So yeah, it's either a elite player in half decent nick, Jordan Spieth 16-1, or it's a good ball striker in that 100-to-1 range. That seems to be the angles. The one I have gone for at that price point that we were going through, and I'm talking about non-winners or winners, that players that win very infrequently. The one I had to take was Justin Rose. 10-time winner on the PGA Tour. And this guy was leading the Masters for a considerable length of it. So he's clearly playing some good golf. There was 45-1 about Justin Rose with short places. I think 45-1 was potentially Unibet when I went live. I just took the 8 places, 40-1. It's like, yeah, sign me up, Justin Rose. He's not my favourite brand, as Jeff Feinberg would say. He's, you know, Rose isn't my brand potentially, but 40-1, Paddy Power, 8 places each way. And he has got, he's finished last 5 visits, 5th, 8th and 5th in his last 5 visits here. He's got 10 top 30 finishes here out of 11 starts. He's only missed the cut here once. And if you want a player that's motivated, Justin Rose, coming up to Kiora Island, where he finished third at the PGA Championship in 2012, and he's out of all of the automatic spots for the Ryder Cup right now. He's got just, to keep
just,
playing.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Just having a poke through his, you know, where he's at in terms of his last win. 2019, January 2019, Farmers, if yeah. I'm reading it correctly. So
there's a couple of wins in there as well. Colonial, I think that was in May. I think he also had a win at New Orleans in late April. So he has won a few tournaments in this kind of time, this time of the PGA Tour calendar in the past. That was another thing that I liked about Rose. I've always said Justin Rose is a bent grass player. He putts better on bent grass. I get that. But he's won a couple of times on Bermuda grass, and he clearly loves this golf course, because as he said, you just can't fake it around it. Just for my metrics. Now, I did mention him in the top 12 of my strokes gained approach metric over the last 8 weeks. He tops greens in regulation over the same 8 week time period. Justin Rose at 1, Corey Connors at 2, Emiliano Grillo at 3. So those are the three players in this field who have hit the best green numbers over the last 8 weeks.
Could you wonder whether it could finally fall for Grillo this week? There has to be less importance on the putter. It's just stick, you know, get a little bit under par, but you don't need to go super deep. Well, sorry, the course will dictate that the scoring should not go super deep. So
I have to say,
doesn't need to be rolling in so many birdies. If he bangs in whatever 70% greens and reg, maybe even 75, well, that'd probably be a big ask this week. But
Harbour Town, yeah, this is similar, isn't it? Very, very similar. Grillo, huge chance of winning this week. He just has that habit, does it? He just has that habit of shooting himself in the foot when he's in the lead.
It's torture to be on him. As a warning to all listeners, if you haven't backed Grillo before, it is torture to be on him. So, but if he does do it this week, then you know, fair play to him. I just can't put my money in there.
I could see Grillo leading this and throwing it away, or being just off the pace and getting a backdoor top five. It'll be one or t'other. And at 50-1, that's a decent each way punt, isn't it?
It's okay. Ten to one place payout.
Yeah, if you want to take that. Grillo is in a superb spot with his game. It is the Emiliano Grillo of old. He's just a ball striking machine when he's on it. The other two I've gone at big prices. I almost got 250-1 on this particular individual, and literally I'd finished the tip. It was being formatted to go live, and 250-1 was cut to 160-1. But I've taken Keith Mitchell. 160-1 with Unibet, of just a little half a point each way stake. Keith Mitchell was one of these guys that played beautifully last week with Branch Snedeker at New Orleans. He's outside the 125 for the FedEx Cup. He won a couple of years ago at the Honda Classic. So that 2-year exemption will be coming to a close in August. So he needs to be earning his card this year. Mitchell, again, if you look at PGA National, if you look at Bay Hill, he's also played well at Sony Open over the years, YLI. Always comes to the party on Bermuda grass. He's just the kind of guy that, I, for me, could take last week's momentum and build on it again this week. He was 11th here on the only time he's played the Valspar Championship. That was back in 2017. And back then, he Monday qualified to get in the field because he was a Korn Ferry player at that stage. And he finished 11th. Over the week here at the Valspar. So had no PGA Tour status whatsoever. I wish I could have got the 250s. But anyway, I'm happy. 160-1 I got with Unibet. That is still hanging there. If you take 10 places each way with Ball Sports, that is as short as 90-1. And the other one I've gone for, you said off mic you like this particular bet. Chase Seifert. Now, I managed to get half a point each way on Chase Cipher at 250-1, 8 places each way with Paddy Power. And the thing with, I said to you before we started recording this, on my 8-week trackers, he's 22nd for driving accuracy in ranking in this field, 8th for greens in regulation, 24th for scrambling. And from a strokes gain perspective, he ranks 23rd for tee to green. And for strokes gained current form, so strokes gained in the last 8 weeks, he's 15th in my analysis. And he was 250-1. Sign me up.
Should not be that price with that those stats.
Don't think he'll win it, but already since he's been on the main tour, he's finished 4th at the 2023 M Open. And a few, just over a month ago, he finished 3rd at PGA National at the Honda Classic. And what's the Honda Classic? Technical, horrible golf course, single-digit winning score. He finished 3rd. And you know how lightning quick that got over the weekend when Matt Jones won that? Mm. That was fiery, that golf course. And, you know, you just look into it. He's 29 years of age. He went to Florida State University and he grew up in Panama City, born, raised, which is about 300 miles just up the coast from here in Palm Harbour. Sign me up, 250-1.
I'm in.
First round leader, wouldn't put you off that either. I wouldn't put you off first round leader on Cifa or Mitchell, actually. I mean, they're the kind of ones that... There's something in their play right now. Now, whether it lasts for four rounds, we don't know. But first round leader, yeah, I could see that as well for both. But yeah, so I've gone for Seifert, who's playing some outstanding stuff right now. Mitchell, and then shorter prices, Justin Rose, who I still think is great value. He was as short as 28-1 with Sky Bet, and others were hanging 45-1 about Justin Rose. So, that, you know, just tell Sky Bet don't want to take a penny of money on him. And I always think that's a great sign. I've got Rose at 40s, Sung Jae-im at 30s, and Corey Connors at 25s. Are there any others that you're having a punt on, Barry? Are you still cogitating?
I'm kind of cogitating, percolating, trying to find... I feel like I'm kind of going to focus either on the shorter end of the market or in that kind of 90-1 plus brackets. And I'm just trying to see who really pops out. Stenson has a very good record here. What's going on with Stenson at the moment? There's little signs of life.
Yeah, I looked at Stenson quite closely. The other one I looked at around there that's a winner, Brant Snedeker. Now, Snedeker isn't your ball-striking Paul Casey. But, as we've seen here, Jordan Spieth's won here. He's more of the Patrick Reed mode, isn't he? Where he loves a classical golf course. And I said on the podcast last week, keep looking at Snedeker. He's gonna pop somewhere. He has to pop because he's in that FedEx Cup territory where he needs to perform. I think he's now back into the top 125 after that fourth place last week with Keith Mitchell. But he's got to keep performing. An older style golf. I just don't know. I don't know. I think for me, Snedeker's more your Sedgefield 22 under par winner. I'm not sure he's going to win at 6 under par. That's what. Danny Willett's 100-1. He's playing better.
He has been for a while, but it just hasn't really happened.
No. Patton Kazire. Yeah, Kazire's been playing some great golf, but again, I think Kazire's your 18 under kind of winner. I don't see him grinding out a 7 under par victory on a tough major championship kind of golf course, Patton Kazire.
Yeah, Willett hit that funny blip because he showed quite well and then had a couple of back-to-back missed cuts kind of out of nowhere. And look, obviously the last 2 weeks he's gone a bit better. With the 18th on his own and then 8th last week. So, in the team event.
Keep thinking about it. I'm surprised because you've been mentioning Taylor Gooch. I thought you might have a little punt on Taylor Gooch or Talor Gooch.
Still getting through the field here to try attack it. Peter Uihlein's playing well, but I don't know if he's accurate enough to cope with this. He's second in your scrambling. So it's another interesting one. He won there 2 weeks ago on the KFT. So
Phil Mickelson, 150. Yeah. We're grabbing straws here, clearly. But yeah, if you look, you know, as we said, a short price winner or one, you know, this sweet spot, 100 to 125 to 1.
This is what happens when you fall out of balance missing Paul. You know, you have that third person in there just to go, lads, what? You're talking a lot of crap here.
The one thing I will say, you haven't mentioned Kevin Kisner on Bermuda grass. So I take it he bowls up and wins this week.
He probably does now at this stage. Look, he's three missed cuts in a row, albeit last week's was in the team event format. But something's not matching up with what...
What was
showing in your in your 8 week trackers? He was popping a little bit in those, but it's kind of disappeared a bit.
It's just gone.
Yeah. How about Sam Burns? He's got a couple of good results the last couple of weeks.
Quality player, isn't he?
Is he showing up on any of your trackers?
What did show for Sam Burns was, you've asked me a super awkward question that I'm going to have to dig into on my computer while I'm waffling. Bear with me. Valspar, here we go. The thing with Burns is we know he's a quality player. He was 12th for strokes gained tee to green at Harbour Town last time. So, yeah, he's in the wheelhouse, isn't he?
And he's at a reasonable price. Yeah, a few to think about.
He grew up just around the coast in Louisiana, so it'll be au fait with the grass and the conditions and everything. You just got to ask yourself, does Sam Burns win his maiden PGA Tour title at a grinding 6-under par at Copperhead? It just didn't kind of 100% compute for me. Doesn't mean he doesn't win. But he's a quality player, Burns. We know he's going to win at some page, and it's very, very, very likely to be on Bermuda grass.
Yeah, it feels like I might have more bets for the European Tour this week than I do in the PGA Tour. Like I love the Sungjae shout. I love the Chase Seifert shout. Apologies for butchering his name.
Sorry, listeners are used to us butchering names, especially me.
Yeah. So. Yeah, finding it tricky to dig in. I want to find a price on Michael Vizacki, the Monday Q guy. I saw the video last night and dug into the backstory. He's a phenomenal golfer. He's over 30. He was 36 wins on the mini tour, on the mini tours in Florida, and then he has a 59, 18 holes in one, and has been trying for years to get on tour. And then you see that, just brilliant outpouring of emotion to make it. And he rolled that putt in on the last
20 footer.
That thing just was went down the hole like a vortex. It was brilliant. So, yeah.
600 to 1 with Bet365. He's been priced up. Michael Vizacki.
Waiting for a few more bookies to come up with some markets and see what I can find out from that.
We sit off Mike a top 40 on something like that would be quite nice on a Vizacki, wouldn't it? I didn't know he was so precise. I mean, I've never come across the guy, but was he, did you say 30 titles?
Something 30, 30 mini tour events or whatever way you designate them. So, guy's a player. Just shows the quality of play, it's just so difficult to get onto tour.
We've waffled for 122 minutes. We've got to close this podcast down. We do apologise to listeners. We always say, let's try and make it an hour.
Of timestamps in there for the guys to get through and the girls.
I thank you for your time, Baron.
Cheers to you too, Steve. Good show, and good luck to everybody this week.
Fantastic. Oh, there's a photo just came through of Paul's son in plaster. Lying on a hospital trolley. So that's where Paul is. I hope Paul's son gets better soon. That's not been a great morning for the Williams household. But we got through the podcast. Barry, I really appreciate your time this week. Thank you for it.
Cheers. Cheers, Steve.
And thank you to listeners. We'll be back again next week for the second event in Tenerife on the European Tour and the Wells Fargo Championship on the PGA Tour. 2 weeks to the PGA Championship. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system.